Good evening, everybody.
Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 97. On this week's show, we are going to review Spider-Man Homecoming. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Joining me via Skype is Brian Bogad. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
From the Main Street Gazette, also joining via Skype is Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere, go to New York City, most parts of Queens, visit the experts over at meitravel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Right now you're listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. His website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, we are Disney Magic Hour. Add yourself to the group. And if you're already in the group, add your friends to the group, as a number of you did this week. So thank you very much. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. And of course, Melissa, where be the Instagram?
At Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
And Ryan, everything that you do over at the Main Street Gazette can be reached at
MainSTGazette.com is where you'll find the main site. If you use the Main ST Gazette for Twitter or Instagram, you'll find us there. And if you search for Main Street Gazette on Facebook, you'll find our page.
I'm pretty sure I also started saying Gazette. I don't know why.
It's a common mistake. No, it happens a lot.
I almost said kazoo, which is not a word that any human being uses anymore.
Maybe regularly.
A camp counselor. Maybe.
I have some Fort Wilderness kazoos. There you go. Like, they're right back over there.
Sure. Of course you do.
Yeah, of course I do.
All right, boys and girls. Brian Bogart, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. It's so hot.
Ooh, it's actually quite pleasant here.
Oh my God.
I have the back door open. I got the fan going, and it's really nice. I'm not sweating.
No, it's disgusting here.
Yeah. You decided to move to basically Satan's front door, and yep. There you go.
I'll think of you when you're shoveling.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, so this weekend brought us a highly anticipated film, one that people have been clamoring for quite a bit. It is the full film introduction of Spider-Man into the MCU. And, of course, with that comes some, you know, legalities and whatnot of, you know, reasons why Spider-Man wasn't part of this from the beginning. Of course, he made an appearance in Civil War, you know, which was great. It was a phenomenal introduction to an old new take on the character, as in it was the most like Spider-Man that most of, you know, the readers of Spider-Man books, when we saw him appear in Civil War, it was like, yeah, that's it. Sam Raimi's Spider-Man was fine. It was good. I thought Tobey Maguire was good. I'm not one of those people who are all of a sudden going to turn around and be like, it's garbage. You know, you get that a lot of stupid reactions sometimes. I thought the second movie was the best by far of the three. I thought the third was not even approachable to the first and second one. I think the first one is good, although it's got some weird pacing issues, I think, just because it was trying to like find its own footing. But, you know, we were introduced to Tom Holland as Spider-Man in Civil War, and I don't know anyone who, you know, of course there's someone, I know that, but most people were very, very receptive to how Peter Parker was portrayed in that.
He was also very similar to how, like, when I was younger, like, the old Fox TV show, like,
absolutely,
you know, so even if you didn't read comics, if, like, you grew up on that, like, it was very much his same, like, jokey kind of, you know.
Yeah,
and stuff.
He had the jokes, but he was also a kid.
Yeah,
which that was a problem with Tobey Maguire. He never struck me as a young kid.
Yeah,
that was the only thing that I would say, you know, ever really, bothered me about Tobey Maguire in that role is because he never looked young. He never looked like he'd be in high school.
And Andrew Garfield just never looked like a nerd. So
yeah,
and
Andrew Garfield looks like Andrew Garfield. You can't. I mean, so you know, it was a great reintroduction. But of course, the big question was, how's he gonna? You know, what's gonna happen with his own movie? Because Sony owns the rights to the film versions of Spider-Man and all of the Spider-Men, which we'll discuss that later. And how are they going to play nice with Marvel? Because obviously Sony still wants to be like, I'm big boy, I own this. But at the same time, they're the ones who had to bring in someone else, basically, because they had crashed so many times now with this franchise in spectacular fashion. Spider-Man 3 killed the character on the screen for a while, and then they rebooted it, and the first film with Garfield was okay, and then the second one was bad.
Yeah.
So they were going to reboot it again. And if you fail that many times with Spider-Man, maybe you shouldn't have that property. The same thing can be said when you look at Superman over at WB. You know, if you continually fail with a character that well-known and that iconic, maybe it's just not up your alley of talent. So luckily, Disney and Sony made a deal, and Marvel was pretty much put in charge of the writing of the story and stuff like that. You know, the director, you know, picking all the parts and basically finding a way to make it fit into the MCU. And that's where we are with Homecoming. It's directed by John Watts, who previous to this was, he did a lot of work actually with Onion News Network. So if you found Homecoming funny, which many people do, he has a great background in that, obviously, you know, especially not like, you know, not fart humor, you know, like Minions humor. It's more like dry humor or just actual comedy. He also had a good turn in dramatic with Cop Car with Kevin Bacon. So he had an interesting background, you know, for his debut film. And then coming to this is such a huge step up, which we've seen very recently. People not handle that jump very well. But I have a feeling there was a lot of, everyone was trying to get the ship right because this was a can't fail film, you know?
Yeah.
There are too many writers to name on this film, though. This is definitely a script by committee. But the majority of it, the story, was written by Jonathan Goldstein and John Francis Day. Now, what I tell you, the other movies that they wrote.
Yeah.
Hollywood's crazy. With how people get certain jobs, because if I was to tell you that the writer of Horrible Bosses 1 and 2 is going to be writing Spider-Man, you would look at me as if I was crazy.
No, they have a crazier credit, I think.
Vacation?
No.
The incredible Burt Wonderstone? No. None of these are good movies, by the way. Horrible Bosses is okay because of the cast, because the cast is really funny, but nothing that they actually get to say is particularly smart or intelligent. They're just really funny.
They also wrote Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2.
Yeah, not even the original.
Nope.
They were brought in for the second one. So, like, you know, again, this happens, though. You know, you get people who, when you look at their back credits, you're like, why would you ever get this role? And it's because they did a hell of a job in the room selling themselves as the right people to do this.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how the Russo brothers got Captain America. You know, they did my Dupree. What's that movie? Me, You, and Dupree?
Me, You, and Dupree, yeah. I think so, yeah.
One of the worst bombs, you know, that Owen Wilson, I think Owen Wilson is in that one. You know, it was just a string of awful scenes, that whole movie. But for whatever reason, they had their hand on the pulse for this. They also did, like, Community, though, previously. I don't want to go into the history of like, other... No, no, it's okay. What were you going to say?
I was going to say two of the other writers, yeah, they did Community, American Dad. Two of them also worked on the Lego Batman movie.
Okay.
So, like, for humor, like, their names are Chris McKenna and Eric Summers. I think, like, that might be where you also find some of the more humor.
Yeah, so the punch-up moments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, who knows who wrote this? I don't know. Who knows?
Six names, so, yeah. It's kind of nuts.
The cast is crazy. It's a hugely talented cast. Obviously, Tom Holland is pretty new to this. But, I mean, he's obviously going to be a massive star going forward. Brian, did you know he's going to be Nathan Drake?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, he's going to be Nathan Drake in the Uncharted film, which I think is kind of interesting. I mean, they're obviously
They're going real young.
They're going real young. So I guess they're seeing a lot of films out of that, and they don't want to start with somebody who's already like 35-something or 40-something like Mark Wahlberg. Because remember, he was the guy who was supposed to get – who's going to do that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, in Perfect Universe, Nathan Fillion 15 years ago starts that series.
Yeah.
Because, wow. But if you haven't seen Lost City of Z, which actually comes out this Tuesday on Blu-ray and home video, or whatever we're calling it nowadays, Tom Holland is in that, and he plays the son of the lead character, who's played by Charlie Hunnam, that guy from Sons of Anarchy. He's really good. Everyone in that movie is really, really fantastic. He was also in Heart of the Sea, though, more recently, well, semi-recently, with Hemsworth, which was directed by Ron Howard. So it's a Star Wars, Marvel, Disney, you know, conglomerate pretty much over there. And there's also a lot of other names that we all know. Michael Keaton, of course, got the villain role in this as Adrian Toomes. And if you don't know who Michael Keaton is, wow. But, you know, Batman, Birdman, Spotlight. He's going to be in the upcoming live-action Dumbo. He was the voice of Ken in Toy Story 3. He was Chick Hicks in Cars 3, you know, in Cars. So he also has a lot of kind of ties to Disney recently with voice acting work. Mm-hmm. Which I was aware of all those roles, but I didn't put it together where I was like, huh, he's kind of been around Disney a lot lately. Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, good for him. Obviously, we have Robert Downey Jr. appearing as Stark and Iron Man. We got Marissa Tomei as May Parker. I want to talk about what they do with her outfits in that movie.
Yeah.
Jon Favreau as Happy Hogan, which I would say is the meatiest Happy Hogan role since Iron Man 3.
Two.
Iron Man 2. They definitely have him in the slot, and there's, dude, more Jon Favreau is never an issue. I'm going to skip a couple of names first. Jacob Batalon is Ned, Peter's best friend in this film.
Is he from the comics?
I didn't recognize the name.
Okay.
I didn't look at it. You know what? Let's just talk about the movie. Because we're going to talk about some of these people as they come up in the film. And we are going to hit a spot today, guys, where there's a spoiler wall. Mm. So if you hadn't seen Spider-Man Homecoming, you're fine now. We're just going to talk about our impressions of the film. But then down the line, I'll make the spoiler announcement, and we're going to talk about some other stuff. I would avoid IMDb.
Yes.
On this film, if you haven't seen it yet, I would avoid reviews. I would just avoid the internet. Go see the movie before you read up on it, because there's some things in here that are kind of nice to discover as you're watching the film itself. So
we have a cold. Then do research for your podcast and find things out.
Yeah,
like I did.
We have a cold open here. Another cold open. I mean, Marvel's done this a couple of times, but I thought in particular what was really cool about this film opening up was that we didn't get the Marvel splash at the open. It was the Sony one.
Right.
So it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, I felt it was kind of, just as a watcher, because I'm fully just like, okay, we're going to see a Marvel film. And it's not like Fox. Like, I know when I go see an X-Men movie, it's a Fox thing and all that kind of stuff. But Spidey was in, you know, Civil War, so I'm expecting the Marvel splash page. You get the Sony one, and then you don't get the Marvel one until we get this really cool cold open. And we basically get introduced to, our guy Michael Keaton. And the film just sort of takes off from there. It really, really does. Mm-hmm. It kind of opens like a Bond movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And from there, you know, we meet Peter and we go through everything that the film has within it, which if you watch the trailers, you got a good idea of it. It is a Spider-Man film, but it's more a Peter Parker film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's something that's really important, is that they make a lot of effort to make this about Peter finding himself, in a sense.
Without doing, like, this is Peter Parker, this is how he gets his powers, blah, blah, blah. Like, without doing that, but yeah, you focus on him.
Ryan, did you miss at all the basic origin story of Spider-Man? Like, I know that we've probably spoke about this before. Is that an element that you did, that you wanted to see in this film?
No, we've seen it a lot in recent history, and I was okay. I mean, we don't mention Uncle Ben at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I never heard the line, "With great power comes great responsibility," and I was totally okay with all of it. I knew it was a departure, and I was okay with it. Focusing on Peter Parker, his awkwardness, who he was as a student. And it translates into Spider-Man. You know, he didn't lose it when he put on the suit. To keep that thread going was fantastic to see. So I was completely good with the tone of, there's something in the background that we're not going to talk about. It's, you know, and that's how families are with, you know, truly in real life with their dark moments. Like, you know what? It's not something we want to talk about right now. Great. Let's move on and let's see where we are.
Brian, did you go with Kyle?
I did.
Did he have any? Because he's young. How old is he now?
He's 10.
Thought he was 9. Did he have any confusion as to who Spider-Man was? How did he get his powers?
No, he knows. I mean, honestly, if you don't know who Spider-Man is and how Spider-Man got his powers, my 3-year-old nephew knows who Spider-Man is and how Spider-Man got his powers. And even if he doesn't care. He just knows that he's Spider-Man. He climbs on walls. He shoots webs. He swings. It doesn't matter. Like certain heroes, yes, maybe like with Ant-Man or something. Maybe you need more of an origin, like, because that's not a well-known. Spider-Man is probably, besides Superman and Batman, the most popular. Those are your top three superheroes. So there was really no need for it for me, for him, probably for anybody. He had no questions, no confusions or anything.
And I'm really happy about this. I'm happy also because I haven't heard any complaints about it. Again, I'm sure someone is somewhere.
I'm sure, yeah.
But, the overall thing is, we're good. We know. And even if we don't know, it doesn't matter.
And it wouldn't have made much sense, I don't think, because of where it came, where it fits into the overall universe. It wouldn't have made sense to do an origin story, so it's perfectly fine.
I mean, but what's funny about that is this film is sort of, it starts as a prequel.
Yes, it does.
We kind of go back in time, really, to a pre-Civil War or just barely pre-Civil War, montage in a sense. And it's really clever the way they do it, with the way that a 16, well, how's he, 15? 14? 15. 15.
14.
How old?
Yeah, sorry, 15. 15.
Yeah, no, he's 15. Yeah.
Okay. How old a 15-year-old probably would, take care of something that he wanted to record or something like that. It's just done very smartly without being snark or pointing the millennial finger at kids, which, you keep seeing a lot of films doing lately, which I just think is kind of tiresome. So we also get some changes though, to the world of Spider-Man. And I want to just talk about them because I thought they're all really great. We'll save one of the changes. You all know what I'm talking about till after. But I want to talk about Flash Thompson. Now, if you've never seen Dope or Grand Budapest Hotel, you have the best homework this weekend because your homework is to watch two of the best, coolest films in the last decade. And Tony Revolori is absolutely phenomenal in both of them, in Grand Budapest and Dope.
His name doesn't match. I think of him.
I guess.
I recognized him from something and I did not know that's what it was.
It took me a second. Because he does, because he's in heavy like dress in Grand Budapest. Mm. What I mean? Like he is wearing very specific costumes and he's got the little mustache and stuff like that. And then in Dope, he's supposed to look like a 90s rap nerd, and he does. So, like, again, he's in a very specific thing. This, he's just dressed as a kid, and I've never seen him, and he seems to have grown and grew a bit, since filming Dope. But I haven't really seen him in anything in between. I'm sure he has been in stuff, but I haven't seen him. So when he popped up on stage, it took my mind a minute, and I was like, oh, my God, that's who that is. And the fact that they have taken the alpha white male jock moron as the bully, as Flash always was, and made him more of a relatable bully. There's bullies out there that are just, making fun of people. It's like they're not really physically imposing. They're just smarter and snarkier, in some ways. Or snarkier, I guess, is really the way to do it. Or, less secure. And I absolutely loved him as a new take on Flash Thompson because I was bored with the Flash Thompson of old. I didn't want to see Peter Parker get a wedgie or something stupid like that. This was better for me personally. I thought this was a really good change for that. Did anyone dig that? Was anyone familiar with how different that change was for Flash?
Oh yeah. I mean, I knew that was a huge change, and I really did. I dug it also. It's basically he's a nerd bully. He's a nerdy bully. And it was refreshing, and it's a I like that direction rather than the stereotypical quarterback, high school quarterback, tall blonde guy who's going to shove him into a locker.
Yeah.
You know, that's of a lot of the stuff that happens throughout this movie, it's very relatable to now, I think, to the type of experiences that is more typical in a school setting than that, you know, that the classic take of what a high school life is like. I think this was much more relatable.
Yeah.
For me, this also looked like a high school body of students that would be from a school in Queens.
Yeah.
100%.
Because that's another thing where, like, you know, look, Queens isn't filled with 98% white people.
Yeah, honestly, New York isn't. I don't remember seeing many white people at all.
Like, yeah, you know? Like, that's the thing. So, yeah, that's right. I thought that they nailed the idea of where this is, what kind of environment it is, you know, what the students are kind of, you know, built up from. These are all improvements of what's been done before.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I wasn't familiar with the character of Flash. Like, I can assume what it was, you know, back in the day. But, like, to just get, like, this introduction, like, I thought they did a really good job of, like, oh, he's nicknamed Flash because he just gets, you know, his hand up quickly. Like, you know, and like Brian was saying, like, that's relatable in a school setting. Like, you know, he's not the fast quarterback, which I guess is where it originated from. But, like, I really liked how they almost like grounded the film more in reality than, like, you know, some of the other like stereotypical stuff that we've seen.
And then rounding it out with the kids, I mean, Ryan, we get Jacob Batalon as Ned, or Batalon. I don't really know how to say his last name. He's Parker's, you know, best friend in this. He kind of steals some scenes. I thought this was one of my favorite things, was that each of these actors, each of these kids who are in this film, they all have their moments. And in particular, Ned and what's her name? Zendaya. Okay, now I know she's a big, you know, Disney star girl. Yeah. I have zero knowledge of her.
She's awesome.
I thought she was off her rocker, hysterical in this film.
Yeah, her dry, like, sarcastic remarks were my favorite.
Ryan, did you ever watch stuff that she did on Disney and stuff like that?
I've seen it in passing. I haven't seen enough of it to know what she could or couldn't do. But yeah, she did. She knocked my socks off. Ned knocked my socks off. And it was great to see somebody who was Peter Parker's best friend who wasn't named Osborn.
Mm.
You know, you didn't have the same tie. Same way with Flash, with the changes to Flash. We took it from the 1950s and we said, okay, we're going to update it. And we're gonna take away some of the pieces you're going to expect. And we're going to change some stuff. And yeah, every change they made into that story made it make more sense, made it more relevant to today. But you have characters like Ned who he has several moments where I think of, you know, we see a couple in the trailer, but beyond that, he's very, very present in this movie and as a force that you're going to see throughout. And Zendaya just always kind of being in the background, always kind of being around whether or not she needs to be. And then to have just that, like, turn. Every time she had a thing, she had a thing, and it's just that she turns something on you, and you're like, that's really good.
Yeah,
she really fit in well, and I had absolutely no expectations of her because I just didn't know who she was.
I just feel like their, like, comedic writing, like, with the kids, like, comes out really well. And, like, I feel like they wrote each one very carefully, but it didn't sound scripted, like, when they were saying
something. No, they all have their own personalities, which is obviously, like, key. You can't just have a bunch of kids who are all sort of just slightly different shades of each other.
Yeah.
These are all pretty different kids. Obviously, Ned and Peter Parker have a lot to tie in together, and their friendship is a good thing in the film that I also am very happy that we never get. A lot of movies, whenever you meet two best friends at the beginning of the movie, there's this cliche, dumb fight that happens in the middle, and then this resolution at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And while they have disagreements, they act like friends. They have disagreements, and then they're still friends.
Yeah.
You know, they're not ready to throw in the towel on their friendship at every argument they have, the way you see that in a lot of other films.
True.
Yeah, well, there was a spot that came up that I thought that they were going to maybe do that, and they didn't, and it was very, you know, I was like, okay, you know, that's good because I'm one of those tired things that people, you know, that they use in films also that I'm glad to see they didn't put in here.
So, well, and I know during the movie, during the production, they leaned heavily on John Hughes. The one scene with standing where it really comes in, but they leaned heavily on John Hughes films, and it shows. You can see bits of Breakfast Club. You can see bits of Ferris Bueller, of Pretty in Pink. They're all in there somewhere. And they took that – this is how kids actually react to each other and really built it in really well to this one.
Quite literally on the Ferris Bueller one.
Yeah, it's quite literally. Yeah, you won't miss it. Yeah, yeah, it's not something that you'll miss.
Yeah.
I missed it.
So, because you don't really know, Peter. You don't really know if you're Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That's why.
I guess. Yeah.
So towards Peter Parker and his, you know, his high school thing, I think they got everything right. Let's talk about the Spider-Man part of it. This is a Spider-Man in learning. You know, he's still a young kid who has had an experience like none other children his age. Like, he was in a fight with Captain America.
Yeah.
Now, I like that they make a mention in this film towards that, where, because it kind of bugged me a little bit in Civil War that Cap even had an issue with Spidey, an untrained 14-year-old. I don't really care what kind of strength he has. He's still Captain America.
Yeah.
And I like that, because it kind of reminded me of, like, every time, like, the Batman Superman thing, it's like, well, if he had time to plan, it's like, shut up. Yeah. Just kill him from space. Like, that's it. We're done. So with this, there's a little nod to that moment, and Stark says, if he wanted to, he would have put you down in a minute.
Yeah.
You know, like something to that effect. And I just thought that was a really good way of grounding the ability of Spider-Man at this particular time in his career. Mm-hmm. And so then the Spidey stuff is really him trying to be as helpful as possible, but either destroying everyone's backyard and roof in the process because he doesn't know how to, like, properly get that swing technique just yet.
Well, you know, it's hard in the suburbs.
That's the thing. Like, yeah, you know, they trap him in the suburbs sometimes where you can't just swing around buildings, or, a video game where I can just shoot the webbing towards the air and I magically get connected. Yeah. So they played with that idea a lot. But
I like that part.
The abilities and the use of Spider-Man in this film, I thought, again, was smart. I think they did what they were supposed to do with it, and they didn't do anything overly different. They just introduced a lot of things in this film that were never introduced in the other films. And Spidey felt right to me. I don't want to see the learning bumbling stuff too much. It works for this film. I want to see improvement now going forward.
Yeah, well, like, the learning stuff in this film, I didn't feel like it wasn't like how in the other films, like, him learning his power. It was more like him learning his limits. Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I thought that was kind of cool. Like, he was ready to take on the world because he felt like he had, you know, when he was in Civil War, like, he had such a big role. And, like, you know, it's almost like when you get, like, given a great responsibility and then, like, you're demoted almost. You're like, how do I do this small stuff? So I kind of liked it. And I liked, you know, there was, you know, Tony had the, you know, the line in there about friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Like, I thought that was kind of, like, it was cool. It was a nice way to have him learning without being like, oh, I can jump rooftop to rooftop now.
You know, because you already knew that. Because he wouldn't have made it to the airport if he wouldn't, you know, in Civil War, if he didn't get that far already. So towards the handling of Spider-Man, Ryan, did you enjoy this take on, you know, it's still Spider-Man. He's, you know, 100% Spider-Man, but he's learning, but not a novice. You know, we kind of catch him in a, we catch a teenager in a growing phase, you know, is a very obvious way of saying it. So how did you feel that they handled that balance of, I don't want to see my Spider-Man be an imbecile and just get knocked around, but I don't want to see him be invulnerable either just yet. You know, not that he ever is, but how did you enjoy that handling?
I liked it a lot. I feel like one of the things that maybe missed a little bit for me on some of the other movies we've seen with that learning phase is he kind of gets the suit on and it's kind of like you see him kind of testing his ropes, but it's never the awkwardness all of a sudden of who Peter Parker is goes away. That doesn't and he hasn't figured out how to create the alternate identity yet. He hasn't figured out how to, he should have that those and there are several of these in the movie where that Peter Parker shows through. He still has the skills that he's learned, but the personality hasn't developed yet. The Spider-Man persona hasn't developed yet. And I like that a lot. I like that that's what he's learning now. Like he can do the basics. He understands him, you know, how to move, how to flow, you know, how to use his powers for, you know, for good, but he's still learning how to not be a teenager almost effectively. Like he's growing up on that side faster than he is on the high school side, and it's fun to watch that the play between No, I got this. You know, I can stage myself in such a way that that's how superheroes do this, right? We have this, and it's not how it happens. It's more natural, and it's better. I like it.
And a scene that really hammered that home was the scene where Spider-Man meets up with Aaron Davis, who's played by Donald Glover, and he puts on what's called intimidate mode. in a way, and it's clearly that's not a Spidey thing though. Like, it's good. Like, he learns.
Yeah.
Like, because that's also a side shot of Batman, because there was literally in Dark Knight Returns, the Batmobile goes into intimidate mode. Like, those words pop up on the screen. So I kind of feel like that was a sideways nod to that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Right. But also towards Spider-Man. Peter Parker is very close to Spider-Man. Like, Superman and Clark Kent are two very different people. Bruce Wayne and Batman are two very different people. But a lot of Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that balance, and there's that understanding, like, you know, how to do that correctly. And seeing him fail at that, especially in the Donald Glover scene, you know, in the parking garage, was just a great spot to do. And we're going to talk about more about Aaron Davis you know, later in the show, okay? But there's some seeds being planted here. Brian, we get a little bit of Iron Man-esque in this film with a talking voice, disembodied voice with the suit and all that. How did you enjoy the introduction of Jennifer Connelly, if you didn't know that's who it was?
I did not.
Yes, which, if you think about it, makes perfect sense, because who's she married to? Come on now.
I know.
I don't know. Who is she married to?
Ryan? No, Melissa, you said it. Who's she married to?
She's married to the man who plays Vision. What's his name? Paul Bettany.
That's right. Yeah. Paul Bettany.
She's married to Paul Bettany. So the new voice, the new, you know, you could say.
The female Jarvis.
Yeah, the female Jarvis is literally voiced by his wife in real life.
Okay.
If they're still together. I thought there was a little thing with them recently. But whatever. That's Jennifer Connelly as Suit Lady. Mm-hmm. Pretty much, you know, she's pretty much known in this film.
Karen.
So I enjoyed that. This, you know, kind of twist to it as well.
Yeah.
There was, you know, a lot of, I was wondering who it was, so, you know, something silly like that, but that, nothing like that. So the Spider-Man portions of it, did you enjoy the handling of Spider-Man himself?
Oh yeah, I absolutely loved it. That's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see of fumbling, bumbling, trying to figure out, you know, his place in this new world that he's thrust into. Kid, I don't want to see a polished Spider-Man whipping around and, you know, dispatching of everybody. I mean, he's 15, and there's that great line, and I'm not spoiling it because it's in the trailers, where Ned's, you know, Ned's like, you know, you are a kid. Like he said, you know, I'm in hand. You treat me like I'm a kid. He's like, well, you're a kid, and it's part. You know, they did. This is by far, you know, for me, the best portrayal that they have done of him, and I know Kyle like really took to it. He was really into it. He really liked it.
I was curious.
I mean, it's relatable. Kyle's 10, and he's supposed to be 15, but you know, from my experiences with Kyle and stuff, they nailed a lot of that stuff. I mean, like you said at the beginning, the whole, you know, shaky cam, I'm making my own YouTube stuff like that. You know, that's what they do. That's what kids. That's the thing now. Like this is the way they view the world. And they see things, and it, you know, they did a great job with it.
And also, I'm happy to hear that, because also, I mean, you could say that there's not as much action as one would expect in a standard Spider-Man film in this one. And the fact that Kyle didn't lose interest, I think, shows that they did really well on those other parts, because it kept your interest going. Actually, we haven't even mentioned Laura Harrier, who plays Peter's love interest in this as Liz, and. She's also, you know, she's not Mary Jane. She's not Gwen, you know, like that's not there. So it's nice to see that another, you know, character was brought in, and she handles it very, very well. And I think that they have a cute little chemistry between the two of them. You know, when they're on screen together, she's, you know, a well-balanced character, and they don't make her into the spiteful girl, which she has more than an opportunity to become in this movie with kind of a rightful purpose. Not even kind of, with a rightful purpose. But she doesn't. You know, she is just well-keeled on that kind of stuff.
And I like how they didn't paint her into a stereotypical corner either. Like she wasn't
the pretty girl. She wasn't the geek girl.
Yeah, like she was, you know, she was just a girl like who had interests. Like she was putting up homecoming signs, but yet she was also on the debate team. Like, so it was like a realistic person who, you know, and yes, she happens to be gorgeous. So, you know, like, but gorgeous.
Tall.
God,
she's the tallest person in school.
She was a one life to live girl for.
Well, her and Zendaya are both tall. They're both tall. They're both tall.
Zendaya is really tall.
She's
too.
A one life to live girl. I don't know what that means.
Soap opera.
Oh, she was actually in
a soap opera.
Oh, okay.
When that was going on, but yeah, like so, I liked how she was portrayed, like how they characterized her.
So, then, kind of at the. You know, at the center of all of this, where it's all kind of coming towards, is Michael Keaton as Adrian Toomes, the Vulture. And trust me, if you thought like, that was always the thing, like, are they going to do Vulture in the movies? Like, we were all waiting for that, and we were like, is he going to be an old bald man, and he's going to have feathers? Like, this is going to be weird. It's going to look weird, and I wonder how they're ever going to do this. So they got around that. Michael Keaton, to me, is one of the standouts in this film. Look, Tom Holland, I already knew Tom Holland. I knew what Spidey was going to be like. I kind of already knew that because he was so damn good in his short time in Civil War.
Yeah,
I got Peter Parker like in that fully. And, of course, they expand on it. But like, I had a good idea of what I was going to get from that. Keaton, though, was a really great surprise for me just because... You can go villain in so many different ways. It has no bearing on what he's done before in his career. You can do villain in a lot of different ways. And I loved the way Keaton did this one in particular because he plays that middle ground of he's got some validity to his actions. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not just like, well, I'm just going to do this. Like he's, you know, things happen where he makes a decision like, no, you know what? I'm tired of getting stuck in these kind of situations and I can do something else. And it may not be the right thing to do, but it's the right thing to do for me and for, you know, and for my family.
Yeah.
And which then, they've played that card a million times. Like Sandman had that card. Remember, I'm going to put my daughter. Remember that? But it was bad. It didn't work. But in this one, I felt personally it worked really well.
I think it's interesting that this is one of the first Marvel villains that were kind of like, yeah, this was really good. And like, I wonder, I mean, I know the other films had a lot of different writers and stuff, so I know that plays like a big part of it. But I think it's funny, like, because a lot of times we were always kind of meh with the villains, you know.
No, I like this villain.
And like, yeah, like, I think it's cool that we're like, no, this one was, you know, this
is like
good.
I like this one. And again, like, Ryan, going towards you, we avoid the Osborns. Mm. You know, this has nothing to do with the Osborns, and I think the whole film is better for it because we've been inundated with, we got to bring in this guy, we got to bring in this, like, we don't have to do that. So I enjoyed the Vulture a lot in this as the villain, and I really enjoyed watching Michael Keaton work because he's just been on a roll lately. Did you have any interest, or you know, how did you feel that Vulture was introduced?
I was really pleasantly surprised. He makes perfect sense. He's not a top tier arch nemesis type of character. There's a sympathy to him that you can kind of get behind. And we talked about that recently. Some of the best villains we've seen in other franchises have been this sympathetic side of it. This guy you can go, okay, there's a rationale here that I understand, I can relate to. But he's not so difficult. He puts up, you know, one hell of a fight for Peter. But, you know, for somebody else, he may have been, you know, nothing, you know, for Cap, it could have been somebody he could have knocked off on a, you know, on a whim. Like, this was something that was going to raise the level of where Peter had to stand, but not go so far as to be like, it's not believable at that point. So it was a great way to put it, and Keaton's performance is phenomenal. I agree. He's been on a tear recently. So it was, I think it was a great handling all the way around.
I also enjoyed that they explain, because this has always been something, you know, if you're a casual, you know, reader of comics and stuff, you know, you're like, hey, all of New York is like Spider-Man is like getting thrown around buildings and everything's going haywire. And he's friends with all these other people, or at least he knows all these other like superheroes who could finish this in an afternoon, in a matter of minutes with their help. Why don't they come down? And Stark says, it's a little above the, it's not in their pay grade. Like, there are bigger things that are happening right now that we can't worry about a thief in New York. Because if we did that, we would have to work all the way around the clock, everywhere in the world, all at once, and it's not possible. So I thought that was also good. It's just, it addresses, like, why doesn't Iron Man just show up and shoot this guy out of the air, and it'll be over?
Right.
You know, like, that would be the movie. It'd be over in 10 minutes. But it's because there are levels of interest that these people have to do in order to live, you know, and be able to go after the bigger things that happen, like a Thanos, you know, and stuff like that. So I was happy that they addressed that.
Yeah, and even the you know, it's addressed in multiple ways from multiple angles in the movie. Like, Iron Man addresses it, but then also it's addressed from the other side of it, from Vulture and stuff like that, you know, about doing what they do. So, you know, that they do what they do to stay under that radar. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he was great. I really liked the character, and he looked so cool. I mean, we've all seen it from the trailers and everything, but that was just
a cool looking badass outfit.
Yeah, it didn't look too comic booky.
I do have one complaint though. This is another villain that we're basically told is born out of, you know, hatred towards Tony Stark. I think we traveled that road more than enough times now. We can stop that.
Well, yeah, I think it was partial that, but it wasn't completely that. It wasn't.
I didn't even need it to be partial.
I mean, kind of made sense because in like
it
that
does
world,
make sense.
Like
it
Tony
does.
Stark is such a big, you know, conglomerate, more like Stark Enterprises, like. And we never got the villain being like, I hate Tony Stark. Like, it was just like, I hate this whole thing, you know? So I understand, like, it is born out of Tony Stark's actions.
Yeah.
But they didn't focus on, like, I'm hating him so much, like, personally.
I understand that. But I still just don't need that to tie back to Tony every time. Yeah. Because we're sort of making him patient zero for every villain in Marvel. Like, that's it. Like, Loki's the only one. The other complaint that I would have is the final battle.
That's my big complaint.
This is my big complaint. Mm-hmm. Without going too deep into details, it, of course, takes place at night. Shocking, I know. So you already have the low lighting. It's very, very overly quickly edited. And it takes place on an object that is blinking in and out of visibility as is. Mm-hmm. I could not tell. Now, this is the first time I watched it. Maybe the next time I watch it, I'll have a little bit of a better sense of balance of where things are going. But I thought it was almost unfollowable as to what was going on. And it was just moving way too quick for its own good. You know, just edit less. Less is more sometimes, especially when it comes to editing fight scenes. Depending on what you're doing, and this was one of those that I did not enjoy.
No, I thought it was outright horrible. It really bothered me, and it was almost impossible to tell what was going on, and it felt like I was at a rave for half of it, and then half of it was at a rave, and the other half I didn't know what was going on.
It was just way too. It felt like a Transformers movie at that.
It did.
I do not want that.
I can tell you guys didn't watch Iron Fist because, as compared to Iron Fist, this was clear as day.
That's the thing,
which is terrible.
Yeah, that's the thing. Though I'm not going to compare it to anything else. It has to stand on its own thing. And I did not like the final fight scene.
Yeah.
And as much as I loved Wonder Woman, I did not like the final fight scene for different reasons. It had nothing to do with, like, it was different reasons. Stop having everyone have to fight at midnight. All right? Stop having these quick cuts. Not everything is Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
It's never been that way. We have to stop with that stuff. Because I don't know. I found it indecipherable. Ryan, how did you feel towards it?
No, it was. It had a great concept into what it was going to be.
I love the idea. Yes, absolutely. Let me put that in.
And
I love that setup so much.
Yeah, it was the delivery of it that floundered quite a bit. And even the resolution of it kind of lets you go, wait, what? Where am I now? What's just like it didn't tidy up as neatly as it could have because of how it was, where it was, how it was set in motion, and yeah, again, those cuts,
just too much. And I don't know what the fix is for this. I really don't. I was trying to think of. I almost want to go through action films and look at final fights and be like, which ones really work for me? You know, and what makes them work for me? You know, what is it about this fight or that fight? Now, obviously, emotional involvement matters a lot. Okay, mm-hmm. That matters a ton. But even if I'm really emotionally involved, if I can't tell what the hell I'm looking at, and I can't tell the flow of it, it's no good. And obviously, part of that problem for this particular fight sequence is, was any of that not CG?
I was going to say that. I think that's what it boils down to, a lot of it.
So is it that they had to hide what would have looked very rubbery and very elasticy in darkness so it didn't stick out as much? Like, Ryan, was it the 20,000 Leagues, you know, issue where it's like, hey, we shot this in the light and, oh, my God, it looks like a monster. Like, the film looks terrible, you know?
I can't say that because we saw the Vulture, you know, a couple times in the daylight. He looked great.
Yeah.
He is a dark figure. He's not bright and flashy at any point.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to blend in. He's trying to stay under that radar. We've seen Spider-Man in the daylight in this movie, but even go back, look, you don't have to go back far. Go back to Civil War. The real true massive fight scene in that movie is, you know, 12 heroes on an airstrip in broad daylight going at it. None of that took away from that fight scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are ways to do this, and even with where we are and what we're working with, because I don't want to give too much away, mm-hmm. we've seen that in daylight elsewhere, mm-hmm. and it works fine. So it's there's not an excuse for it at this point.
And if you wanted to keep it at night, that's fine, but you have within your own stable fight scenes that happen in the dark an awful lot in Daredevil and things like that, where the action is very
fluid,
you know, shot well and fluid, yeah. and you can Absolutely. Follow it. So it's not like you haven't done it before, where you're like, well, we don't know how to handle this. Like, it can be done. I mean, Daredevil's a great example. Of fighting in the dark, you know, basically, because that's what he does all the time. Yeah, he fights at night.
It's just a mix of like the two of the three elements in this scene are supposed to be not visible at night.
Yes, yeah.
Like, that's not a good mix. And then the third element is wearing a dulled out red suit. Like, mm-hmm. it's just not a smart idea. Again, it may have just been that it was the first time I was watching it. Obviously, I'm going to watch this again. You know, as we go down the line, and in 4K, which actually I want to talk about that before we sign off tonight, today. But I just was not happy with this fight, and I wasn't happy with the conclusion. And we'll get into that in the spoilers as well, because there's a way to do it, and I like it, because even though we'll go into that into the spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa, how did you feel though? Because actually, I feel like after we left the movie, I complained about the fight at the end, and you were okay with it.
Yeah, honestly, like, I don't know if I'm just now starting to get like used to all this nonsense, but also I did watch Iron Fist, and like the cuts in Iron Fist were like worse than Bourne, and it was terrible, and I couldn't tell what was going on. So honestly, like, while there was some jarring stuff in this final fight, like, I never felt that. Like, I was confused. Like, I was just like, oh, okay, you know, like, they're going to different spots in the screen, like, whatever. Like, I don't know. I guess my brain was just able to kind of, like, extract whatever out of it. And, like, I don't know. It didn't bother me. Like, there were some jump cuts that were...
I want to know. I want to know the steps that they took to get through the fight. I don't want, like, okay, now they're on the wing. Maybe they're on the bottom. Maybe they're on the top. I don't know. Oh, there was a flash of lightning. All I remember specifically from that fight... was a wing being punched into the top of the plane trying to hit Spidey, and then another one.
Oh, no.
Everything
like,
else was just a complete mishmash to me.
Oh, no. So, no, maybe, I don't know. I was fine. I could follow, you know, Peter's movements. I thought there was a really cool part where they, like, had him climbing along the... we said it already, the plane. But, like, and like some cool effects happened. I don't know. I was fine with it. And I thought there were like a couple parts where it didn't cut too much and I was able to tell what happened and like I could tell where they were going. And I mean, it was fine. It wasn't like the best, but I didn't also, yeah, I didn't have as much problems as you
all
guys
right.
did with
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. Well, then at least you enjoyed it. Yeah, it's good. Now, I mean, I just wanted to hear that someone actually enjoyed it. So that's good.
Well, one of the things that I tried to give it the pass on walking out was, well, it's, And I'll just be honest. It was Sony. They were using somebody from in-house that, you know, one of their companies to do it. And then I go and I look and it was, no, they went to Marvel. They went to ILM to get all the technology done correctly. So I'm like, well, I don't even have that excuse to go hide behind.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's just directorial decision that I just didn't like.
I just think also with like end fight scenes, like, and even towards Wonder Woman, like,
what are we supposed to do?
People, like, you know, it's a big last fight scene. Explosions look better at night. You could fill the sky up with fire. Like, I know it's corny and stupid, but like, you're also like sometimes dealing with places that like to spoon feed that type of Transformer Michael Bay boom.
Okay,
stuff.
But would you argue with me that the best fight in a finale so far of a Marvel film took place in a basically concrete room that I could see everything in Civil War? With Tony and Cap.
Yes, but also with that, I will argue your point of the emotional attachment with that fight was also a lot bigger.
Okay, all right then. I would say my second favorite fight, this is really, I mean, I have to go through it, but I loved the first Thor-Loki fight in the first Thor film because they were on the Rainbow Bridge and it was a back and forth, like they were both getting in their shots.
Yeah.
And it was like a good, even superhero-ass superhero fight. Like, I really loved it.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can't get that anymore.
Yeah.
It's always the superhero getting kicked up, down, left, and right for 9 minutes and 59 seconds of the 10-minute fight.
Mm.
And then the villain doing something stupid and the hero getting out of it.
Well, I feel like that doesn't necessarily happen in this one because you do get, like, the villain. While he does beat up Spider-Man, like, I also feel like Spider-Man spoils his plans. It's not necessarily that Spider-Man beats him up, but he...
All right, we'll talk about that because yeah, I disagree with that completely.
Okay.
We'll talk about that in the spoilers, absolutely, okay. though. Marissa Tomei. Did they make her try to look unattractive? Because guess what? It didn't work. She's still attractive. But nothing that she's wearing in that film feels like something that she would pick out of a store.
Well, I mean, high-waisted pants are in nowadays, so...
Because
I went to Sushi Friday after seeing the movie Thursday night, and the hostess had on like Marissa Tomei pants. I'm
okay,
like, I guess it's
right.
a thing.
So
I'm
yeah,
like, I guess this is a thing.
High waisted pants are back. They just didn't give her a crop top, which is what like the younger girls would wear.
And that's okay. what she was wearing: a crop top and high waisted pants. The hostess, yes. Yep.
All right, so that's okay. So she was only wearing the bottom half of the outfit, not the top.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought that they, like, I don't know. I feel like someone made a note on some corporate paperwork. And they're like, she's just too attractive to be Aunt May. And that's what people on the internet were complaining about. So we need to not make her look as ridiculously hot, but then have everyone in the film say how ridiculously hot she is. It's like those two things are stupid. She can just be hot Aunt May. Yeah. Everyone's totally fine with it. And if you're not... then you ain't got no sense.
I didn't think they made her look unattractive at all. I mean, the only thing that was weird was they gave her glasses.
I don't think they achieved.
No, no, yeah.
I think they were trying
Okay, but in that, like, I don't think that they were trying to. I don't know if it's because, like, you don't know the fashion. So, like, to me, like, she was just, like, a cool aunt who, you know, was wearing what people were wearing nowadays. Like, the only weird thing was the glasses. Like, to me, that was the only, like, did she have those in the first one?
No, she wasn't wearing.
Yeah.
I mean, she wasn't.
Yeah.
And yeah, she was just like talking with Peter and stuff, and all of a sudden she was wearing glasses when she didn't have that in the first one.
Yeah.
So the argument I'll make here is the argument I made with my wife yesterday because she was like, "Are the 70s back? Really?" Like,
yeah.
My only thought was that let's stick with what we know about Spider-Man in hope that we've carried it. She was married for a while, so maybe high fashion wasn't her thing for a while. Like, these are just what she's bought that fit, that worked, that whatever. And so she's still wearing those clothes. She hasn't gotten back out into the, I'm back to being single. I can go and you know, buy the sexy outfits again. She's still has that, you know, that almost that married wardrobe kind of a thing, where some of it still is drop dead gorgeous because it's Marissa Tomei, and some of it's just like, you know, stuff you'd wear around your house.
Okay, my only thing with that, and this is just because it's a what's what I'm looking for, making sure things make sense in time.
Continuity.
The scene where Robert Downey Jr. is at their house happens a week before this movie.
So I know.
Did she totally trade in her outfits and get the most odd looking set
outfit.
Of bifocals?
She just had one good outfit.
Yeah, like she's got one cool, like, just, yeah, I'm just wearing clothes outfit.
And let's just play this card. She may have been like, oh, I just got home. Let me go change. There's Tony Stark in my house.
That's
let
what
me
I was
put on the best outfit I have.
Valid.
That's what I was just going to say, Ryan. Right. She probably was, yeah.
All right, I can go with that. All right, that makes sense to me now. See, now everything makes sense.
I'm going to buy high-waisted pants now, though.
I just don't like that last fight scene. I really don't. I have a real problem with that last fight
scene. It was so funny, though, because I said the same thing. I'm like, oh, I guess that's a thing. And then I went to sushi, and as soon as I walked in, she walks out from behind the counter. She's like, this girl's like maybe 22, 23 max, and she's got high-waisted pants with the cotton top. I'm like, I guess this is a thing.
All right.
Because that I just didn't know because, I mean, I wear T-shirts and jeans, so what do I know?
All right, well, let's get into – okay, so in the overall, I mean, I think we kind of already made it seem pretty clear. I do not enjoy the final fight. I will give it a second try when I watch it again, but I will absolutely watch it again because I think this is the best Spider-Man film to date. I love Spider-Man 2. I think Doc Ock is perfect. I think the fights are phenomenal, and I think the fights are phenomenal in that film – because hero and villain fight almost evenly, and then the hero wins. He doesn't win by default or some idiotic decision like in Spider-Man 1, where it's like Peter Parker just got beat up left, right, up, and down. They both were totally new at fighting, but he just got killed. And then the only reason he wasn't murdered is because of Green Goblin's flying, you know, thing and a brick wall. Like, that was it. That was the only thing that changed. I don't like that in films. I think it's boring. We got it. You want to put your hero in a perilous situation, but an even fight is just as perilous as the other one. And if you ever need an example of how phenomenal an even fight can be that still seems really dangerous for the heroes, watch The Raid. Mm. A film that takes place in total brightness in that last scene. It's only three guys in a room, and you feel every single punch. And every time you think that villain, who's outnumbered, who is getting hit just as many times as the heroes, you think he could kill them at any second. And that's a good fight scene. But I 100% think, I really do think this is the best Spider-Man film to date. I don't think it's perfect because I think they botched the finish, which the finish fight is really important. But in terms of building characters, starting this Spidey, you know, the Spider-Man's own little community, his universe, his community within the universe, I think they really, really did a great job. I'm excited for what comes next, but I'm also really measuring my excitement because Sony kills things that are good once they see it make any money. Perfect example, they are asking for a Baby Driver sequel right now. Because Baby Driver was a nice big surprise hit from Edgar Wright. And their immediate thought is, we need a sequel to this. Shut up. And that's the kind of idiotic thinking that Sony has done repeatedly that screws them up. And I think it'll get to a point where they're just going to tell Disney, like, well, we got it now. It's okay, guys. We'll take care of this. And they're just going to drown it. So I really hope for the best with this series going forward in this character because he really deserves it. But I just don't trust Sony at all going forward unless they're going to really let Disney, well, Marvel and Kevin Feige lead them through the forest. I do not see how they do it on their own because they've never been able to. So why should I think they will now? But Homecoming for me is an absolute grand slam for what this movie had to be except for the ending. And I look forward to seeing Tom Holland play this role for a number of films going forward. Melissa, how about you?
Yeah, same. I really enjoyed it. I liked the new take and the modernization of the characters. And I'm interested in Spider-Man in the MCU universe. Like, I like it a lot.
Going forward. Yeah. Brian, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with you totally. I really I think it's the best portrayal of Spider-Man. It's my only real gripe was that was the ending fight scene, and I really like all the new the way they handled the stuff outside of the Spider-Man being Spider-Man stuff, and I think they just did a fantastic job, and I'm really looking forward to it. Hopefully, it can move forward and not fall into the trap that you were just talking about with Sony. Yeah.
Ryan, Peter Parker is back on the screen in a big way. How do you think they did it?
I've always hesitated to go, that's the best movie in whatever franchise I've ever seen. The first time I see it, I need time to internalize. But hands down, this one's walking away with that right now. There are little problems I have here and there. You know, one of the biggest one probably being that in battle. But overall, they hit it on every single notch that I was looking for.
All right, so guys, that's going to conclude. You know what? We'll do the winner now, because if that winner hasn't watched Spider-Man yet, I don't want them to suffer and have to get screwed up for the movie. So we're not going to go into spoilers just yet, because I want to announce this week's winner of the Giving Away KJ contest. And, of course, this week you're getting kind of a bonus one, in that we were given a little mini poster when we went to go see Spider-Man Homecoming, and we're going to package that into as well as your KJ lithograph. So, of course, if you're not following Disney master artist Kevin John on Facebook, you absolutely need to follow him. He's got some exciting stuff coming up. He now has a line of soap.
I saw.
Coming up, which is cool, because I actually knew about soap. That. Aha! Yeah, so they're actually 3D sculpting pieces of his art, and then putting them on soap, and all the colors of the soap and everything like match up with the art that's actually in the piece. It's really cool. It's this
really
cool
fun,
little
yeah.
thing. So he's got that. He's got a wine club. He's got the coffee club. And of course, he has all of his art. And you can check all of that out over at kevinjohnstudio.com. And we are very happy for this week's winner is Sarah Cacciatore. Congratulations, Sarah. I believe me and Mel met you a couple months ago. Is that months already?
No, because we met her at Pandora and that hasn't been open that long.
It wasn't 2 months ago?
No.
Oh, okay.
Maybe a month.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It opened in July? June?
It opened the end of May, yeah.
May. Okay. All right. So congratulations, Sarah. PM me with your address and all that kind of good stuff so I can send out your stuff. Basically, guys, I do all the shipping like once a month. So, the last couple of weeks, if you haven't received your stuff yet, that's just how it is. Because I travel a lot. Work. And if not, I'm going to see Metallica. So, congratulations once again, Sarah Cacciatore. You are this week's winner of Giving Away KJ. And if you're listening to this and you're wondering, how did she win? Magic. Not really. If you go to the Last Gen podcast page on Facebook, that's LASTGEN podcast, the pinned post will always be the most recent episode of Disney Magic Hour. If you like and share that post, that's it. You get entered. The only thing I will say is also make sure you're liking the page, because we've had situations where people share it and it tells us the number, but that number of names is not appearing on the page itself. Like, so you have some sort of privacy setting that I can't see that you shared it. Liking the page seems to kind of get around that. So like the page and then like and share the most recent pinned post, which will be the most recent episode of Disney Magic Hour. And that's it. You're entered into next week's drawing. So huzzah to all that. And now we shall enter Land of Spoilers.
Cool.
Land of Spoilers. From this point forward, we are going to talk about some spoilers referring in connection to Spider-Man Homecoming. So if you have not seen the film yet, go out and see it, enjoy it, and we will see you guys next week. And for those of you who have watched it and you want to hear us talk about spoilers, let's get going in 3, 2, 1, spoiler land.
Everybody dies.
Everyone dies. It was a dream.
It's all in purgatory.
Bruce Willis
he was in the Matrix.
Is Spider-Man. All right, so let's talk. I want to first talk about the fight scene and why I didn't like it.
Okay.
Because Peter does. I mean, look, I like the idea of Peter loses but wins, but I'm just so tired of the superhero losing the hero having him by the scruff of his neck, about to stab him through the chest, and then he's like, oh, wait, something else, whether it be the idiotic Martha name or a bag of shiny things, where he's just like, oh, never mind, I won't just finish this, which will take me zero time, and that'll be the end of it. I'm going to drop on the floor, and I'm going to pick up this bag.
Well, I mean, he's and also, like, didn't want to kill a kid. I mean,
oh, actually, he did want to kill a kid. He tried to drop a building on him, which he absolutely thought would kill him. Then he had a guy waiting outside of his prom. This is actually previous to that. Waiting outside his prom, trying to kill him as well. He 100% was trying to kill a kid.
Okay,
he told him.
He was trying to kill him, but maybe, like, when it came down to, like I can try and kill people, like by, you know, sending things out to them, but when it comes to, like, me holding the knife to their throat, like, that might be a little weird.
That's not why he stopped, though.
I know.
He didn't have this. But don't say that.
Yeah, he tried to throw him into an engine. He tried to throw him into a jet engine. No, that's,
so that's the thing. Like, if they would have had that, that would have been good. Like, if the mask would have opened up, you know, in some way, and he would have been, like, you know, like, in something of, like, realizing, like, he's my daughter's age.
Yeah, like, he's
that
just
would
a
have
kid.
Been good. All right. You know, and he would have been like, stay here.
Giving them credit.
And I'm not, you know, just stay down. And then he goes to the crate. That would have been good. I would have really liked that. But that's not what he does. And I get it that, like, Parker is new at this and blah, blah, blah. And you know, and hey, what's his name's been doing this now for a couple of years, right?
Over 8 years.
Yeah, it's been 8 years. Jesus Christ, the timeline on Marvel, I do not. I have to look at a line of that thing. So we're saying that Avengers, the first one, happened 8 years ago?
I mean, I thought it was 15 years, I thought.
Is it 15 years?
No. In the beginning, they show you him cleaning up, and then it says 8 years later.
Okay.
Oh, did it say 8 years?
Like, I thought, to me, I'm like, really? That's how many times, how much time? I had no idea that's how much time it passed.
I mean, that was from Avengers 1, so maybe.
I guess, yeah. Did the movie itself come out 8 years
ago?
I'll
check it out.
I'll check it now.
Yeah, check that out, because I know a lot of films have done that. They've just used, like, real time to be like, yeah, this is how much time has gone by.
I mean, it came out in 2012.
Yeah,
that's
2012
six.
Was five
oh, no, that's
years.
Five. Wow, so they added on 3 years, huh? Yeah. All right, well, whatever. So I don't like that. I just do
we
not
did
like
that. Jump.
That.
Did we do that jump with Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Volume 2? Did
that
the same
jumped around.
Jump.
Yeah.
There's a three-year gap somewhere for a reason, I would have to assume at this point.
Time gems with Thanos, that's all I can imagine.
Yep.
So
it's all coming together.
That's the reason I didn't like it. I'm so sick and tired of that. I also had no idea if it was a back and forth fight because I couldn't tell a damn thing that was going on pretty much on the plane.
Yeah.
You know, it was. I love the idea of the Stark Tech plane and, like, you know, Happy didn't really, you know, take him as seriously as he should have. So they're fighting on top of the Stark Tech plane. It's a great concept. I loved it. The idea of that is great. I just think the execution was sloppy.
Yeah, and it didn't have to be like a shiny disco ball going off the entire time
which,
they were
again,
fighting
like,
on it.
In the realm of the scene, yes, that's what it should be doing, but it just doesn't make for me something visually to watch.
It made it very confusing. I had to kind of look away a little bit because it was almost just like, this is bothering me
watching
this.
Now, let me just say, I had that reaction, that this hard reaction once before with Pacific Rim.
Mm-hmm.
I recently purchased Pacific Rim, you know, just because it was low price on 4K. It was 4K or 3D, something like that. And I watched it again at home. And for whatever reason, I was like, oh, no, I'm fine. You know, it may just be that. So the next time I watch it, it might be that. Ryan, was you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's so many obvious answers. And then real quick to back up, Guardians went back 3 years. So my timelines are totally screwed up. But Marvel, thank you. but no, with this, you could have used, you're so high up at altitude where this starts, you could have used that, you know, it could have been a full moon. I don't care if it didn't make sense at the time. Make it a full moon. You have natural light that would have pulled a little bit more, or just didn't, you know, or once you've defunct the plane, just leave the lights on. Like, you know, all that light just gets to come on and you're illuminating. Just something. It also didn't help that they threw a fifth engine on the back of that plane, or
that was the weird
whatever
thing.
It was, because then I'm trying to figure out am I on a wing, am I on the plane, like where were we standing, and that was a little discombobulating as well.
So that was my thing.
I mean, when they got to the engine part, it was a little like the cuts were a little like, wait, where on the plane? And then like that random engine on like the roof was like, what? What's
I don't
that?
Remember that. I gotta watch it again.
Yeah.
Which I happily will watch this again.
But, oh, yeah. when he webs up the engine, I'm like, I didn't even know he did that. I didn't even realize that happened until all of a sudden he's like, oh, that worked. And I'm like, what worked? Oh, yeah. Okay. I see that now because you stopped for a second and like did not like try to make me nauseous. Okay, cool.
Let's talk about okay. So that's the end fight. Let's talk about some of the other smaller details in this though that I want to get into. Obviously, there's a couple of big reveals. I don't really think that the Michael Keaton reveal is as important as...
No.
It's just cool. Like, they did it well. They handled it well.
Yeah, they did really well.
And I couldn't get into this in the regular review, but I think the best scene of the movie is that car scene.
Yeah.
With Peter and him. That is my favorite scene of the entire film because they're just allowed to act, and it's written very smart. And I'm happy they didn't let that drag out. You know, like, who is this kid? You know, like, he just knows. He figured it out because he's Michael Keaton. Also, I really like the way they handle that with Ned. Ned finds out that his buddy is Spider-Man real early in the film.
Yeah.
There's no garbage with that. We get the phenomenal ending with Aunt May walking in as in his suit and getting cut off at what the, you know, and that's the end of it. Do not play that off like, oh, yeah, my aunt thinks I'm a cosplayer in the next film.
No.
Don't do that. If you do that, I'm going to be real pissed. Because that's a stupid scene to throw in then.
Yeah.
Get rid of all that garbage. Like, we don't need it. Let it be a thing that MJ doesn't know. Which, I had no idea who Zendaya was. I, for the whole run up to this film, thought that she was the girl that Pete was flirting with. That he liked. Because I had no idea what this woman looked like. And actually... She doesn't look a damn bit like herself in this film anyway.
No.
So I'm sure that that's going to be one hell of a sexy reveal. And I think that we're going to get the you hit the jackpot tiger line when they go to some
prom or
event.
Something.
Yeah, prom. I guess Spider-Man prom is the next movie.
Oh, I just got that. It was the homecoming dance. And it's
are you serious?
Also, wait. Also,
I'm sorry. Hold on, Ryan. Let's unpack this. We need to...
I was trying to get you out of that.
No, I was trying to move
you on.
Wait a minute, sir. Melissa, may I? So, yes, it's a double meaning ending, but are you telling me that just now you put together that the movie was Spider-Man Homecoming and he was going to his homecoming the entire damn movie? Yes.
That giant banner they put up in the beginning of
like
the movie.
Four different times. It was a shot of the word homecoming in the movie.
I don't know. It's because we're just they're used to calling it Spider-Man.
You caught that?
The Spider-Man movie.
You can follow the action on the plane, but you didn't follow the homecoming thing? I'm just kidding.
I followed it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that was what they were using. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it also worked out perfectly for the coming home to Marvel half, you know, like,
and just like
half.
Coming home to Queens, like, again, the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man line, like that.
It all works.
So, what were you gonna say?
Let's go back to I did love that they threw in, you know, their mascots, the Tigers, like, if you saw that a couple of times throwing through there, because like we're playing the Tigers angle. What I don't want to see with MJ in the future, and actually the most grumbling I did going out of that movie was, you know, I get they wanted to keep it a secret, but we changed her entire name from Mary Jane to Michelle. And I'm like, that's what irritated me of all things. Not even the fight scene. I come out and go, no, her name is Mary Jane. anyway, but I don't want this to turn into like a, you know, Ella Enchanted or She's All That. Or
I don't think it will.
If we're going to make her, let's just, you know what? She reaches a certain age and she realizes, okay, I'm going to start dressing up. I'm going to start, you know, whatever you have to do to make it where it's not like we go to prom and suddenly she's a knockout. And I don't want them to do that with
I
that.
Feel like that's going to happen.
I feel like with her character in particular, because she doesn't seem to be the one who's going to all of a sudden get interested in makeup. I mean, if she's in high school now and
she's
like
in high school, things can change. You know, people change when they're in high school.
But her character. Her character, like the way that they kind of meet her, doesn't seem to be the one who's going to all of a sudden be like, I'm going to wear a lipstick now.
Well, I'm not saying all of a sudden, but she might just grow into somebody who, you know, is like, you know, yeah, I don't mind wearing. I know sweetie, I know women who were goth girls in high school. Guess what? They're not anymore.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Just, I mean, they
changed.
From
a girl who went through high school, I could just say, like,
you know. You were not a goth girl.
No, I wasn't.
That's the thing.
But like, I also was one of the girls who started wearing makeup early, and my friends, you know, none of them did that change. Like, you know, either we were wearing makeup since junior high or not at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. I know because a lot of people I know are like metal, goth, you know, and none of them dress like that anymore. And they all, you know, at one point later in their life, they just started dressing fancier, I guess is a way to put it.
Yeah, no, later in life, yeah, I'm just talking about in high school.
Yeah, I don't know how long they're going to keep that they're in high school. That's always a question about these movies is like, as these kids age 3 years, is it going to be the next day at school in the next movie, you know, but they all look horrifically older and you're like, Jesus Christ, you should be getting out of college. I don't know. Yeah, that's always a tough thing for them to handle.
College.
I like the play on Mary Jane. I don't think it was very, you know, that wasn't really much of a surprise because she had to be somewhere, you know, in there. But I thought they did a really good job with her. And I, again, this is another twist on a character, the way that we saw for Flash, that I think is really welcomed.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy that they did it. And
yeah,
that's
just
the girl.
Popular.
That's the person who shouldn't know yet.
Yeah.
That's the person.
Agreed.
Do the reverse of what we did in the other movies. Mary Jane knew pretty much from the get-go almost, it felt like anyway. You know, she knew quickly in those films. Let her not know in these and let Aunt May know.
Yeah.
You know?
I like that one part where when he saved them in the Washington Monument and they like mentioned to, I think it was Liz, they were like, you should kiss him now. And he was like hanging upside down.
Yeah, he was hanging upside down.
Great.
Yeah.
It was a great little like,
ha-ha. Yeah. So I thought that was really great. You want to talk about Donald Glover?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Donald Glover.
Who might be the most interesting little tidbit of this whole thing. So Donald Glover plays Aaron Davis in this movie. Aaron Davis is AKA the Prowler. But what really matters is he is the uncle of Miles Morales, who is the ultimate Spider-Man in the Ultimate Spider-Man universe, who Kevin Feige has confirmed exists in the MCU somewhere right now.
Yes.
So, there's a movie coming up where a lot of people may not make it through. Now, I don't think that's what's going to happen with Tom Holland. I don't think Spider-Man gets killed in the Infinity Wars. But they obviously are opening the door for Miles Morales to come into this picture at one point or another. He's even mentioned in the movie.
So now
he says something about my nephew
lives in this. Yeah. So now I have a question just because I'm not up on all this. Does Sony have the rights to Ultimate Spider-Man?
Yes, they do.
And Miles Morales?
Yeah, they do. They have the rights to the Spider-Man film franchise.
I just didn't know if because
doesn't
his,
matter. He's Spider-Man. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Falls into it.
So
as exciting as that was, and as cool as that was, because part of me was like, "All right, well, if Marvel owns it, if Marvel were to own Miles, maybe they'll just be like, all right, well, that's your Spidey, and we're gonna start building up Miles, and he's gonna be our Spidey."
Yeah.
But I don't know how that works without seeming really, really like evil, you know, like that's really hard to pull off. But they're too, I mean, look, they're doing it right now with a lot of the X-Men characters in Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
like, those characters are pretty much literally dead in the comic world, and I think that there's a reason for that. That's not by accident. So Miles Morales is there somewhere. How you go forward with him in the future, I really have no idea.
Well, and even with what's going on in the comics now, you know, now Miles has moved from the Ultimate Universe to the regular Marvel Universe, and they're existing together. You know, you have Peter and you have Miles, so there's potential to have them both wandering around. And but it's right. Who has the more creative control over that character in the end?
Yeah.
Melissa, would you care? Would you like? Okay, so you don't really know Miles Morales. You obviously know Peter Parker. Would it be weird for you to go to a Spider-Man film that wasn't Peter Parker? As someone who doesn't have any interest or attachment, I should say, you know, to the character Miles Morales, and not really so much to Peter Parker either, but you're just so familiar with him. Would it be weird for you to go to a Spider-Man film that wasn't about Peter Parker?
I don't think so, because it's kind of like you know, just somebody else putting on the mask. It would just be like, how do you write this character? Like, do you do him well? And does he play Spider-Man well? I mean, you know, like, that's really, to me, more interesting. You know, like, even the whole, like, I don't have an attachment to when Captain America, you know,
Steve Rogers.
Yeah. So, like, but, like, to me, like, it doesn't matter as long as it's done well. So, like, I wouldn't care. I just, you know, we've seen that sometimes Sony doesn't do characters well, and they do tend to destroy favorable characters. So,
Brian, what about you? Towards Miles Morales, you know, do you have any knowledge towards that character? Or, you know, were you aware of that when Donald Glover was introduced in the flick?
No, I mean, I've heard of Miles Morales. I know that he becomes, you know, that he is a Spider-Man. I didn't know if he took over for Peter Parker. I didn't know anything about any of that, but I did know the name Miles Morales, and I didn't realize that was Donald Glover was his uncle. I have no, all of my comic book knowledge comes from the TV shows I watched as a child and the stuff now. I never read comic books, so I don't have any of that attachment to the way these characters were portrayed in the comics. So for me, it would make no difference.
And just so everyone knows, there is a Spider-Man game coming off the PS4, and Miles Morales is involved.
He
appears in it, at least.
They showed that at the E3 trailer.
Well, actually, I thought they only showed it recently, because there's a clip that was put out by Insomniac Games on the 7th of July, and it specifically shows Miles.
Yeah, no.
They may have hinted at a relationship towards it, but they actually show him in the game.
Yeah, no, they... Because,
with the photo?
Yeah.
Hmm,
because it was talked about on another podcast, and host is African-American also, so he was very, you know, into that reveal.
Austin Walker.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. So, yeah, so obviously there's a lot of fronts right now with Miles Morales getting some, you know, getting some notice.
Which I think is cool.
Ultimate Spider-Man was really good when he popped into there. Like, that was a cool thing.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very interested and curious of what they're going to do towards that in handling two Spider-Mans.
I'm interested.
That's really weird.
I just like the idea now of... superheroes like kind of getting more and more diverse, you know, whether it's African American, whether it's a woman, whether it's whatever, like I like this idea that, you know, we're not stuck in like the 50s anymore. Like,
I just can't believe the Captain Marvel film is taking so damn long to get going.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's not really planned for, you know, till later, but it's just surprising.
Yeah, I don't know.
That DC beat Marvel to the punch on this and made a good film is really odd to me.
Boggling, yeah.
It's really odd, because there's tons of great Marvel women characters they've put in the movies. They just don't have a movie of their own.
Yeah, they've lacked on the front woman of that.
I'm sorry, keep going.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, while, like, yeah, they've, like, had Black Widow, and then they introduced Scarlet Witch. Like, they haven't had a strong female solo movie, which is, yeah, the only kind of annoying part.
I liked seeing Gwyneth Paltrow back.
That was a fun interaction.
That was a good little thing. Those that trio on screen is just a lot of fun. Favreau, Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
They're just really fun on screen. I want an Iron Man 4. I really do. I don't know what I want that movie to be. I guess I want it to be the real Mandarin. I want there to, you know, be like, yes, no, there was. Well, even there, according to Hail to the King, or All Hail the King, whichever it was called.
Yeah, the little short.
Yeah, the little short. There is a real Mandarin out there, you know, evidently, but we haven't ever, it's kind of not been, those shorts stopped.
Yeah.
Like, they stopped making those. So part of me wonders, are they still canonical, or have we just, or are they still canonical, but we're just not going to worry about what happened to them? Because that was really the only one that had like a really big impact.
Yeah.
You know, was the idea of there is a real Mandarin.
Mm.
But we haven't gone back to that, and you know, I don't really know how we're going to go forward on that.
Yeah.
Good inside joke for Chris Evans at the end.
Yeah.
Saying how many of these are left, because you know there's always been so much talk about his contract and how many times he's going to be cap again. So I thought that was a really really smart, funny nod to that never-ending debate of what's going to happen with Cap.
Yeah. I also liked the father-type relationship that Tony and Peter had. Like, because it was so Tony, but it was also, like, really endearing at the same time. Like, you know, like, yeah, he was telling him, like, he kind of, like, seemed like he was going to brush him off and be like, oh, you know, just talk to Happy. And, of course, Happy was, you know, ignoring him. But I liked how he was like, but I'm also watching. Like, I also understand, like, you know, that I have to pay attention to this kid. And he was kind of there. And, like, when Peter did get into some trouble, like, he was there for him a couple times. And I don't know. I really liked it. And I liked how he, you know, how the ending was a lot.
Mm-hmm. You know, but I think that kind of goes back to the whole Tony Stark is the reason for every villain almost kind of problem that we have, is that he creates the Peter Parker problem in that we're going to give you a super suit, and while Happy and I are both keeping tabs on everything you're texting, everything you're giving us, it's going to take you royally screwing up for us to actually come back and get involved again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it was an interesting angle on that. So it kind of plays back into that villain's angle as well. It's like, oh, I have to come back because, oh, I messed this up. I have to fix it. But I'm doing a good job. I'm doing a good job. I'm being supportive, right? And it's like, yep, that's Tony.
He is the like, dysfunctional dad almost. Like, you know, yeah. He's, like, trying to be, like, good, but not. I also thought
it was, you know, it also kind of made you realize that they were letting, or were they letting him screw up, but not letting him get too far down the rope?
Yeah.
Like, do you think maybe, that was, like, part of it at all, where it was
maybe,
like,
from
no, he's, yeah, for Tony, yeah. Not for Happy, because Happy just was unaware. But, like, for Tony, was it like, all right, I know what you're doing, but I'm going to let you go because ultimately you're going to learn something from this? Or
if it had been, if they had stepped in after he blew up the restaurant, the convenience store on the corner.
It's, okay, yeah, you're right.
Then I would have been like, yeah, it's time to go, hey, Junior, come here. He let it go a little too far, which is, I think, maybe more Tony than not. But
okay. Did anyone else have anything they wanted to talk about for the spoiler section? Because that wasn't much. There wasn't much spoiler kind of stuff.
There wasn't much spoilers in the movie, I didn't think, really.
Yeah, it was just the reveal of, like, you know, Donald Glover's character.
Really quick little thing.
But if you didn't know who Donald Glover is, that's not a spoiler anyway.
Yeah, and I only found out when I was doing the write-up for this that, oh, that's his name, a.k.a. the Prowler, a.k.a. his uncle. Like, oh, okay.
Another Spidey villain that's kind of hiding in plain sight is Michael Mando, who you might recognize from Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. He's the one in the post-credit scene who stops Adrian Toomes and says, you know, hey, don't you know Spider-Man's name? You know his identity? He's the Scorpion.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's Mac Gargan. So he's a Scorpion. So they're assembling
Sinister Six. It looked like a Sinister Six kind of setup.
But interesting play on Toomes not giving up Spidey, which is good. I like that.
Mm.
What maybe changes that? I don't want Keaton to be gone. I want Vulture to come back.
Maybe, like, whatever happens at the trial, because, like, he hasn't been tried yet. So, like, I don't know if something happens with that.
Or if something happens to his daughter that he blames him for unmasking him. There's angles.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's good. I can see that working really well. So, but that's... I think that's it for me on spoiler things. Did anyone have anything else they wanted to touch on?
No, I'm good.
Nope.
All right. Let's just, just really, really quick. There was some big news this week officially confirmed by James Gunn, the director of Guardians of the Galaxy, that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 will be released on 4K ultra-high disc. So this is the first film for Disney to release in 4K. Spider-Man Homecoming will be in 4K as well, but that's sort of more a Sony release. So that would have sort of been the first, Disney-related film. But obviously there's no Disney symbol or anything that plays in this thing. It's Marvel's. So Guardians of the Galaxy will be that first film. I want to say it comes out in August for its release. And, welcome to a whole nother round of Double Dip coming up real soon.
Surprise.
You can bet your bottom dollar that every single Marvel film will be coming out in 4K. What I really care about, though, is films that were shot on film that might be coming out in 4K going forward, in particular Force Awakens and Rogue One and whatever they do going forward, what kind of media they use. So very exciting work, you know, happening on that. If Disney goes back into its library and starts scanning in 4K films like Sleeping Beauty and stuff like that, that was shot on 70 millimeter.
Yes.
Those are going to be eye-poppingly incredible.
Yes.
It'll also let you see details you've never seen before. So there's a lot of potential for Disney to make 4K the product that people are going to start buying a lot. This is what happened with Blu-ray.
Hmm.
The fight for Blu-ray and versus HD DVD went on and on until Sony, specifically with Sony and Disney, signed up for, you know, Blu-ray. And then that was it. The fight was over.
Yeah.
So this is a big win for the format. And you almost have to try not to buy a 4K TV if you're going to buy a new TV nowadays. The players are still pretty pricey. But I think that when they do a transfer correctly and it's worth it, you know, due to what it was shot on, you're going to get a lot out of it. I can't imagine what a 4K Pixar film looks like.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I don't even know what that looks like. I don't know what those are originally captured in, what resolution they're captured in.
Mm.
But, you know, whew. Man, seeing a film like WALL-E in 4K.
Even when we saw Piper, when we saw the Pixar shorts at Epcot, and we saw Piper again just on the big screen, yeah. Like even that was like, this is like photorealistic again.
Yeah, you can see it, and then we know how we talked about in Cars 3 where there's that scene, you know, and we referenced Piper also where we were like, wow, we saw that in Piper. So 4K finally coming home with Disney, so very exciting. And, you know, hide your wallets, basically, because it's going to get ugly.
Take your husband's car.
Melissa, we have a couple of reviews to read?
We do.
Okay, read away.
Okay, we have Favorite by Haley by 327.
Thank you.
I found this podcast when I was searching for things to listen to leading up to my latest Disney trip. I took to Google for some recommendations on good Disney podcasts and tried a few of the bigger ones, but it wasn't until I found DMH that I fell in love. This podcast is the perfect blend of film talk, park talk, news, and fun. I don't find myself getting bored, and I felt connected to the cast immediately. The online community and Facebook page is awesome as well, and it's amazing to be part of the community that shares and validates my love for Disney. Really awesome podcast. Definitely a must listen. Thank you so much.
Wow, thank you so much.
That was great.
That was great.
Thank you, Google. That was
flattering.
And then we have also Best Disney Show by Grizz Adams. Hi.
Good name.
Yeah. Hi, love the show. Found it a year or so ago when I heard Pete on WW Radio and have been listening since. I really enjoyed the show about men that love Disney. I'm 36, married for 15 years, 3 kids, veteran, own a construction company, and I love the Disney parks. I've been fortunate enough to visit both Disneyland and Disney World 3 times, all as an adult, mind you, traveling from our home in Idaho. My friends tend to think I'm weird when I explain why I enjoy the park so much. We hear you. You're not weird. But it simply comes down to the magic. One of my fondest memories is while on the drive home from our first trip to Disneyland, when my oldest daughter was 2.5 years old, playing the Disneyland Resort CD in the pickup, and my daughter being able to pick out the majority of the rides from the music. We'd still listen to that CD on most drives, much to my wife's chagrin. Keep it up and see you at Halloween Horror Nights. Oh, awesome.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yay.
Awesome. We will see you then. I'm really excited about that. It's going to be fun.
Thank you.
Fun. Thank you so much for the kind words, guys. I'm happy everyone's digging it. Wow. If you do listen to the show and you haven't left a review yet, we're at 90?
91.
We're at 91.
So
we'd
close.
Love to get to 100. And we're at episode 97 now. So if we could get to 100 reviews over the next 3 episodes... Oh, that would be so cool.
That'd be awesome.
It'd be really, really special.
And episode 100 is right before my birthday, so you know, birthday present to me would be really cool. Just saying.
No, we're gonna be busy. We gotta record a show. So sorry, you're out. What was I gonna say? I don't remember.
I don't know. 100.
100. I have no idea what we're doing for that episode yet. and you know what? Because it came up. We were going to try to get Lou to come on this week, but with D23 right around the corner, he's just swamped right now.
Yeah.
So the timing didn't work out. But, you know, we'll be hooking up eventually and doing something again soon with Lou. So I'm looking forward to that. And thanks a lot, guys, everyone listening. 97 episodes in the books. Go off. Enjoy your week. And if you're a wrestling fan... It's a pretty good pay-per-view lineup on tonight. I'm really excited about it. Only because I met Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt this weekend. What? That's right. The Metallica. Go see Metallica, everyone. It's good stuff. It's healthy for you. Till next week. That's way too early to say that one. Wait a minute. Nope, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
This episode of Disney Magic Hour has been brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere, including visiting us for Halloween Horror Nights. We are going to be having a get-together over at Halloween Horror Nights on Monday, October 30th. How it's going to happen is that we are just basically all going to have our Halloween Horror Nights tickets with the add-on ticket of the Express Pass. And we're going to go into Universal Studios and have an absolute blast, travel together as a group. And if you'd like to join us, email charlam@mei-travel.com. That's S-H-A-R-L-A at M-E-I dash. Did I spell it wrong?
You just left off the M. Charla M.
Man, I'm terrible at that. Reading it sometimes. S-H-A-R. You read it. Do it.
It's S-H-A-R-L-A-M. At mei-travel.com.
Letters. The enemy of man. If you email her, she will give you information on renting a hotel for that night. We're actually going to be staying... Where are we staying? Cabana Bay?
Cabana Bay, yep.
We're going to be staying at, that night at Cabana Bay. And she can take care of all that for you, our friends over at MEI Travel, and you know, set you up with your tickets, with your express passes. If you do not need a hotel and you simply just are going to buy the tickets and the express passes... You can absolutely do that as well. If you are going to join in that manner, just please let me know, because Kevin John, Disney Master Artist Kevin John, is going to be creating an exclusive piece of art for our group, and it's going to be based on The Shining, which is going to be one of the haunted houses this year, or mazes, I think is what I heard them refer to it as once.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I don't know what that means. All I care is that Scatman Crothers is somewhere, and I get to kill him. That's all that matters. So he will then be making lithographs that will be exclusively sold to the people who are traveling, you know, who are doing this experience with us. So if you're not going to be renting a room and you are going to be buying a ticket, let me know you're coming so we can take care of that and have a shirt made up for you that you can also purchase. And also we are all going to be going to dinner earlier that afternoon, about 5 o'clock. And if I don't know that you're coming, we're not going to have a seat for you. So you can email me at DisneyMagicHourPodcast@gmail.com. If you're friends with me on Facebook, you can also PM me. That's fine as well. Just let me know that you're coming. So we have everything settled for you as far as headcount. And that's all in thanks part to MEITravel.com, our travel partners, who we use ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right now you're listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/PogoMix, and his website is pogomix.net. I think he actually recently put out a new mix of Aladdin, if I remember correctly. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at DizMagicHourPod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, we are the Disney Magic Hour. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. Melissa, the Instagram is?
Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
And Ryan, where can everyone find the Main Street Gazette?
They can find it at mainstgazette.com. Use mainstgazette for Instagram or Twitter. And if you search for Main Street Gazette on Facebook, you'll find our page there too.
And now is when I say, till next week, say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Good night, Ryan.
Good night, Pete. And say good night, Pogo. I just found the keys to a city. The beats are big and